I welcome all of you affectionately to this last episode of our On the Brink of Death broadcast. It was a very, very nice and at times touching journey which we undertook together. And today I will try to bind all these loose ends, if you so want, or all the strings which were presented together in a very good rope, something that gives us not only direction but an opportunity to practice these insights. See, a monk has one question. The question is, how can I bring the wisdom teachings to life? How can I pull them out of the cloud of theory or wisdom into something that I can feel now, something that guides me to a different experience than my unaided mind and my unaided senses? In other words, a monk wants wisdom texts to become alive for him, and then he wants to share them with others. He feels if he has not been able to make a wisdom text alive in his experience, he has almost no capability or permission to spread them to others. I'm reminded a little bit of the mother who came to Mahatma Gandhi with her little son who was suffering from diabetes. The mother told Gandhi, "He won't listen to me. My son eats sweets in big numbers and it kills them. But I think if you tell him, he cannot ignore it and he will stop eating sweets." So Gandhi is reported to have said, "Come back after 1 week." So after 1 week, the mother came back with the child, and Gandhi said to the child, "Never ever eat sweet again. Sweets kill you." The boy was all ready to act, but the mother asked, "Why didn't you tell him 1 week ago?" And Gandhi said, "I myself had a habit of almost addiction to sweets, so I had to finish this obsession or this strong liking, and only then my words had strength." So, my dear everyone, the subject under which we meet is become who you are. How can you become who you are and stay strong on the spiritual platform? I would like to offer you something which I myself practice. I notice, however, that one or two of you have not yet successfully muted themselves. You need to mute yourself so that the sound quality is pristine, because we will need our whole attention to learn all this. The question here is, what does it mean to act from the level of the real self? And I will now attempt to give you in our final session something like a practical guide with which you can experiment every day. Now, I suggest that you first hear what I will tell you, and then maybe later hear it again from the recordings which will be posted by Upbuild in the net and take some notes that become your guide throughout your life. So after waking up, showering and dressing, find a quiet place where you can center yourself. Maybe do a few deep breaths where you are lengthening your exhale and in this way naturally increasing the lung capacity and lengthening your inhale. This will help you to be there, to be absolutely present. By focusing the mind on the breathing, the mind gets purified, just like gold gets purified by fire. Our mind, says the Bhagavatam, gets purified by slow, gentle breathing. Then, if you are so inclined, say a prayer, enter a higher connection, and then pick up a wisdom text like the Bhagavad Gita and read perhaps for 20 minutes to half an hour. That's about the time which you will take to read through a chapter. Important here is speed reading is not what you should do here. You should be willing to acquire new content to your awareness. Just like a farmer who will go with his catcher through the surface of the lake to catch the very precious algae, you should go through the sacred text and in a way sift it and catch something. How do you know that you have caught something that is of importance to you now? Very simple. It will strike you. It will touch you. Don't we all know this when we are in a lecture, that of the many, many words which are spoken, half a sentence or perhaps a sentence speaks directly to us and touches us to the core. Stop at that time. I remember when I was not well, I needed to retire from my active life and go to the mountains to cure myself, and I would make walks where I listened over headphone to lectures of my spiritual master. And I remember once hearing, I was in the midst of the fog at that time, very high in the mountains, I heard him say a sentence, "What do you do for eternity?" Wow, I thought. I had listened to the whole lecture, but these, how many words? "What do you do for eternity?" 6 words struck a chord in me. It resonated. It really pierced through the layers of my worrying mind, or where I was thinking, will I ever become healthy again, and so on. It really went right to the core. And this is what we are looking for when we read in spiritual texts. We look at something that pierces through, that comes through our various concerns which we may be involved with, and just reach that deeper place in us. So even if you cannot finish one chapter, or you cannot finish this or that paragraph, we look for that finding, that that one thing. When you read a wisdom text, be a spiritual archaeologist. What is the English word? Archaeologist, yes. Who digs and frees the artifacts from layers of earth, and then finally he comes upon something which he can retrieve from the grasp of the earth and look at it and see, wow, I found the lion man, or whatever is the artifact. So then, after having done this, you have now something to reflect on, something to refer to, something which anchors you spiritually when you enter into the life. And so your busy day, I wanted to say. Enter that day with a clear intention. You have a mission. You wish to act from the platform, spiritual platform, the platform of the real self, which has just been touched or enlivened by a spiritual impulse. Very, very important. I had a famous, favorite author who is not so much known in America, and I don't even know if he got international fame. His name was Gustav Meyrink. He was a banker who became a Buddhist monk and wrote very nice sentences, and he said, people don't know that when they wake up from their dreams at night, they are not really waking up, but they enter the even deeper dream of the day where they are acting from the platform of the false ego. So this simple practice which I have given to you in the morning, where you read a wisdom text and wait until it strikes you, or until you have catched something of importance that has awakened your soul to the fact that you are spiritual, that is something you should do every morning. You can do this in other ways. I don't know how far everyone on this call is in their own spiritual practice. There are various good spiritual practices, like one was, let us say, meditative reading, that you read until you find something that strikes you, and then you stay with that and reflect it. Others could be prayer, and so on. Oh, I'm a short glance here on my timepiece tells me I have to not talk so elaborately. Let me put this now before my eyes. So you now want to wish, you want to go through your day on the level of the soul, and three very concise and practical steps will help you to move forward on that soul level, or to live the life of the soul. The first is, ask yourself again and again, who am I? I can't be just my body, my vehicle. I'm not my senses through which I experience the world. And I'm not even my mind with which I interpret the world. I am a spark of spirit moving through a material world in a material body. See, when you remember who you are, you will not become agitated when you identify with something that you are not. And with what happens to him or her, that illusory constructed personality. You will be protected from illusion when you walk through your day by again and again anchoring your understanding in the contemplation of who you are, a spiritual soul, a spark of life, using this body, this mind, and so on and so forth. This is the first step. The second step, you need to act from this platform by becoming a neutral witness. See, due to my actions in the past, I'm destined to obtain some pleasures today and perhaps some sufferings. I will meet certainly some successes and some failures. Some people are likely to appreciate me and my work. Others will not appreciate and perhaps criticize me. If people are kind to me, good. And if they are unkind, I reflect on the truth that in the past I was unkind to others, and I get now what is called my karmic harvest. Whether it's a good day, and I will say to myself, let me break out of the vicious circle of karma and return unkindness with kindness. Just like me, other people are only eternal souls who are learning from life, like I try to do. So this neutral witness will help you to zoom out of the situation, come into a witness position from where you look at things maybe like a cinema goer will look at a cinema film, or like your mobile telephone will look at the situation. The mobile telephone has no emotions. I guess you could program a mobile telephone to say good or bad to certain situations as a particular application, or what is it called, app. But still, we know the mobile phone is a thing. It doesn't feel and will on its own. It just follows programs and so on. No, but you break out of this judging and reacting and just go back and see things as a neutral witness. You see your own karma movie, your movie of life happening to you, and you don't identify with this. Become the neutral witness. That means zoom out of a situation and then with some wisdom zoom in again and act upon this wisdom. You will be amazed how things, relationships, and anything else will change when you are no longer part of a story that was written by someone else, but that controls you all the time. And finally, finally, I have to cut a lot short. That's why I falter here. Finally, be in the higher connection. Tell yourself, every person, every situation, everything I encounter today is exactly where they should be and how it should be. In the classroom of God, there are no mistakes, simply learning lessons. Everything and everyone moves because they are infused with the divine energy, like a rod of iron that is permeated by fire. Everyone has their free choices. Some of them elevate, some of them degrade, but it's not up to me to judge. I can't change that what is outside, but I very much can change my vision, which is inside. And I can explore that higher happiness that lies embedded in my soul. To summarize, I will make a little meditation. This will be different from all the other meditations which we have done. I request you simply to find a comfortable sitting position. Sometimes it's good to just move a little, especially in that lower back area, where sometimes tension accumulates. Sit comfortably and follow these words. O Lord, let me accept peacefully everything this day brings. Let me surrender completely to your sacred desire. Direct and help me during every moment of this day. If there is anything you wish me to change, please grant me the vision to recognize it and the inner strength to change it. No matter what kind of news this day brings, teach me to see this news as your message, even if its import seems hidden. And if the great wave of my life should overwhelm me and my emotions and thoughts scatter, please guide and direct me. Guide and direct me back to acceptance and faith in your all-pervading presence and goodwill. Today, let me remember love, service, tolerance, and forgiveness. And let me remain agreeable to your arrangements and your desires. In summary, to live the soul life, I suggest that after waking up, you do something to wake up a second time, to wake up spiritually. I have suggested reading about a wisdom text and reflecting about it, but you can do anything else according to your level of understanding. And then go into your day with a mission to realize these spiritual truths by very simply doing three steps. Remember who you are, return to this memory throughout the day. Become the witness by zooming out of a situation and not reacting to the old reactionary patterns, but by bringing the wisdom which you have contacted as you were zooming out, back to your life. And third, be in connection with the higher reality, with the supreme reality, the divine reality, the reality of the Supreme Lord, who is behind this whole world and for whom this world is only a dream, where we are so much involved sometimes, and whose wish for whose wish for us, I'm speaking of the wish of the that supreme being, that Lord whom I call Krishna, his wish for us is that we wake up from that dream and live a life of inner happiness and spiritual joy. I thank you very much for listening, and I have come to my time limit. I will now see if there are any questions which you would like to put forward into this group. Please, I feel we have become, throughout these two, what is the word? Two seasons. We have become a community in spirit. And you know, if there are no communities where we can share what we feel, what is the benefit of life? Then it's very boring. So you can freely share. And Hari Prasad has so nicely put on three understandings which make this a safe place to share. So yes, please ask your questions.
Call on Tia to please share your question.
Thank you. So my question is about the Lord's mercy, because it doesn't always feel good when we're getting it, and sometimes we go through a situation that's really tough, and then a few days later we realize that tough situation was actually something that brought a good situation. So we were actually receiving a lot of mercy. So how do we know, how can we recognize the Lord's mercy when it comes into our life? What are some of the signs? And is it even important that we recognize it?
What a wonderful question you have asked. Thank you so much. A spiritualist feels this whole world is a classroom of God, where what we superficially recognize as good and as bad is no longer good and bad, but it is a learning lesson. But he needs to train this understanding. See, as long as we are in the body and the mind, we will react to happiness and distress. But what we can do is we can resist to become overwhelmed by it. I would like to give you an analogy. I went today to the dentist, and I do not know why. It was maybe a past life thing that I was tortured, and teeth were pulled out as a means of torture. When I sit down on the dentist chair, I am not very comfortable with this. And I told the doctor, I said, please, you must know. I'm the opposite of a hero here on this chair. The doctor said, no, I follow you on Instagram. You are very wise. I said, yes, but I have a material body and a material mind, and they do react to the happiness and distress. And I remember that then the drilling came. And I had to, he said, weiter, 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 you can do it. Oh, and it was so painful. I said, I opened up, you know, I made with my hands like this. I think that's what you do when you are in the ultimate fight and you want to say to your opponent, leave me alone, I'm acknowledge my defeat, and so on. So afterwards, he was a very good dentist, no torturer. So he gave me an injection and said, you monks are so sensitive. And I said, yes, we don't eat meat and we don't drink and we don't do all these, we meditate and so on. Maybe that's the reason why. And I told you, I'm not a hero on the dentist chair. But I said, I have good news for you. I still understood and could see that this is just my body reacting to the pains and pleasures of this world. So to understand everything as the mercy of Krishna, that's a high step. Before this, you must practice, I'm not the body, I'm a soul. You must reflect on this every day, Tia. It's a absolute practice. It will not come to you as a theoretical concept. And then you must act as zooming out, you know, from that bodily or physical or material perception. You must try to see it as a witness. And then only you will be strong enough to see really the higher plan and how this is God. You know, what I tell myself is when I'm in a situation where things get tough, I said, I have often seen in retrospect after some time that things that I have learned, I can learn from every situation. I'm not sure if I told you here my favorite story. There were once two twins. One became a criminal. I think I must have told you, but I will tell it again. And the other, a very responsible surgeon. And their father had been a drunkard and a criminal. So they were interviewed by an interviewer. First, the drunkard, who had also criminal tendencies, was interviewed, and the question was, how did you become like this? And he said, how could I have become something else with a father like that? Then the interviewer interviewed the responsible surgeon, who sometimes went to areas like Africa, where he treated people for free. And the interviewer asked him the same question, how could you become like that? And this surgeon answered, how could I have become something different with a father like that? You know, he understood how miserable the life is of a selfish drunkard and selfish criminal. Here understood that there is absolutely more joy in giving and taking. So same situation, different perceptions of it. So yes, sometimes we when I was at the dentist, I couldn't see it so much as Krishna's mercy when the pain hit. But I could tell myself, maybe some realization will come afterwards. And the realization is very simple. I will use every day the very best dental toothbrush. It's an electric thing. It reaches everywhere and it sprinkles water on the tooth. It is it's cheap. It's you can buy it. Electrical toothbrushes are guaranteed. There's many multiple studies are there. And I will my electrical toothbrush had died a few months ago, so I will purchase a new electrical toothbrush, and you know, I will have shiny teeth like the president of the American States, if he has shiny teeth. So good. So that lesson has come to me. So it's a good thing. So you can learn in everything. Don't ever stay in the victim role, like our little story tells us, but see what you can learn from it and make steps forward in your life. So in this way, the devotee sees everything as a mercy of the Lord, which helps him to move forward. But he has to learn to become a little introspective, dear. You have to. My suggestion is really replay this. I don't know how to do it, but you are a modern person. You know, click, 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 and then replay it. Take a pen and a paper and just make notes, and then try to practice. Only I guarantee you, if you practice this for, I would say, 3 weeks minimum, you will be a new person and you will deal much wiser with happiness and distress.
Thank you.
Wonderful. So we have a question from Scott that is from our last episode. How do you recommend speaking about preparing for death to people who are resistant or afraid?
Yeah, solve unresolved issues. These unresolved issues. Oh my God, did I hear this? Scott asked, how do you prepare for death?
Do you recommend speaking about preparing for death to people who are resistant or afraid of the subject?
Acha! Now, I was so enthusiastic that I did not pay close attention to the second. But, yeah. I had a very, very interesting encounter today. See, I only need to go 3 meters from the gate of my house, and then I'm right in the forest, and I call it the big round, this is a route, and then there is a bench which I sit on, and when I sit on this bench, I chant the holy name, and somehow I've noticed something happens. Wild animals feel comfortable to be with me, and all the people, there are people who lead their dogs out, they all stay and want to chat with me. It's sometimes a little problem, but today, because you know, there's so many. I have become the wise man on the bench of our little township or village here. And I counted today, I counseled 7 times, and it was one time two people who rode bicycles, and then it was a couple. So 7 plus 2 more, so 9 people I counted. So one person, he came and he asked me the question, how do you prepare for death, your own death? And I said, this is very do you want to know? Yeah, I want to know for myself. Then I said to him, well, what is your answer? To find out what he knows already. And he gave a beautiful answer, which was in tune with the wisdom texts. He said he has noted, he's an elderly gentleman, maybe 70 years old, he always goes with his dog Elmo. He said, I have noted that all my friends who died, some of them had, I was close by, I was there in the room, they felt they had not resolved things. They had not told something to one person which they should have told. And then I one time noticed when that one person came in at the last moment and acknowledged them, and they could acknowledge the person, they became peaceful that they could die. I have also noted that when I have done a few, you know, help people to go to the other side by counseling them and being with them, holding their hands, singing, and just giving them spiritual support. And I have always noted that no matter who the people are, some were atheistic, when I could help them to look new into the situation, or when I could just promise them to give a last message to so-and-so, no? I would, then I got the telephone number from the wife of or relatives of the dying people. No? Then they were at peace. So when you want to have these, when you know these reluctant people are there who cannot yet fully comprehend spiritual knowledge, just recommend to them that it is a known fact that a person who has cleared all his accounts, so to say, who has taken care of all of his relationships, his businesses, his projects maybe, he can go easily without panic and resentment. But someone who has left things unfinished will be all the time with the mind, with these unfinished things. His mind will be attached to these things and therefore find it very difficult to move on. So you need to help these people to just resolve it. And Scott, I recommend to you, when you talk to these people, don't talk with it in the language of a spiritual person, because they might reject it. Just talk in the language of, it is researched, there are studies on this, and I'm not making this up. It is really something I know, because I'm writing a book at the moment, which I will publish when it will be published after I have died, and the title of the book will be "There Is No Death." It will console all my all the people who may grieve. They will understand, well, he is at a better place, and so on. No? And I have done extensive research on the phenomena of death, when death is easy to accept for people, and when it is just invoking the greatest of panic in them.
Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott.
Pragya, will you ask your question?
Yes. So my question was, with respect to being a neutral witness and zooming out, or being like you're watching a movie, I have actually tried to do this most recently with my boss, and I found that when I try this, the person I'm interacting with thinks I'm disinterested or not engaged at the level they expect me to be. They take offense. My boss actually said to me about a situation, you are not upset. I am upset that you are not upset. And I didn't know how to convince her that I'm interested, but I'm trying to be unruffled by this situation. I'll do what it takes to fix it, but I don't want to get agitated by it. But She wanted me to be added to show agitation.
Yeah. To show that you were really taking it serious and you're really involved here. And I know this. This is has driven people in the past crazy when they dealt with saints. You know, they had martyred them because of the, to just evoke something, a response back that was emotional and loud and screaming and so on. Yes, this is there in human history. I would just here say that it's necessary for a spiritual person to show a little sensitivity to the situation. You know, and when I sit there with a knowing smile, say what you want, you won't get to me, then this is agitating, obviously, the person. You know, you have to, maybe you have to externally say, you know, but and internally say to yourself, I need to play the game, otherwise everything gets highly uncomfortable for in this situation. But try to not see a materialist looks at the world and at the situation with a desire to enjoy it, and when it's not going according to plan, he gets disturbed. A new spiritualist tries to look away from the world like this, to not get entangled. But a bhakti yogi, that means someone who is following the path of divine love, he or she looks beyond the world to a higher reality where he or she will see how can the situation best be used in service to the Lord. And if you, I suppose you need a job to have a decent income so that you are not worried, that you are safe and you can make your chapatis and so on, then you need to be a little world-wise, so to say, but with the vision and understanding, I'm doing this so that I have a good undisturbed situation for my spiritual practice. So a little world-wise from the spiritual platform is required here.
Thank you.
Lachinandan Swami, would you like to have one last question, or would you like to bring us to a close?
In a way, I thank you for your sensitive inquiry. You seem to know my mind because we have become something like family. Yes, I would very much like to, because this is our last session, at least for this season, I would like to really sum it up and give a concluding message. See, when Hari Prasad first informed me about this situation, about this series, Become Who You Are, and his title for me, On the Brink of Death, I was thoughtful. I said, but, you know, I don't wish to create a fear in my audience by talking about death, nor do I want to make a sensational story which I can sell to Reader's Digest, you know, where at least in Germany the old ladies read Reader's Digest always. I think it comes from America. It's some collection of best-selling literary pieces for, and so on. I don't want to. But then Hari Prasad convinced me that no, if you talk with a spiritual perspective about death, then this will be very good for the audience to understand that even in challenging moments, one can connect with this spiritual platform, one can act from a platform of spiritual understanding, and it will serve what we are trying to do, or create for our community, that is, become who you are. And I really then agreed, and I thoroughly enjoyed the journey with all of you. It was very kind of you to listen to me and ask the questions. But I really believe this journey, or these two seasons, are only really successful and help you when you learn to act from the spiritual platform. And I may suggest maybe to Hari Prasad and Rasanath that you go through the three points which we have heard today. They are pretty, they are universal, and they are from they're not my own inventions. I've just fished them, so to say, or caught them, like this fisher who goes for algae. I've just taken them out, and that you really learn from this. Please know that you can't think yourself into a higher spiritual level of understanding. You have to act yourself into this. No, you can't think yourself. We in Germany are told stories when we are little children, and at least in every cultured house, they will tell you the story of the mothers and fathers will tell their children the stories of Duke Münchhausen. I don't think he is known in America. They are not so famous, these stories, like the tales of the Brother Grimms. Duke Münchhausen is someone who always lies. And when you are a child, your mother will ask you, can you detect the lie in what Duke Münchhausen just told you? And it trains your intelligence, and it will also equip you so that when you meet strangers who have bad intentions towards you, you will not become a prey, a victim of them. So my mother always, for every night, told me a new tale of this Duke Münchhausen. And one of the tales I still remember was Duke Münchhausen was riding on his white stallion, and they came into the swamps, and they were sinking in the swamps down. So Duke Münchhausen called for help, but there was no one to help. But then he pulled himself and the stallion out by grabbing his wig. He had a white wig on, and somehow the wig stuck to his bald head, and he could pull himself and the stallion out. And my mother asked me, is this possible? And I said, wow, then I had to think very deeply. I said, I can't tell you now, but tomorrow I will swim, and I will pull myself out of the pond. So if it works, it works. If it not, doesn't work. Point here is, you can't think yourself out of a situation. That's like pulling yourself out. The circuit is complete. You need someone out of the circuit to pull you out. So actions, spiritual actions, by which you contact the higher spiritual energy, will equip you to come out of this or come to the next level in your life. Very important. Please don't underestimate this advice. Please take it with you. It will do you great, great benefit to think about this. And no bona fide spiritual tradition will tell you something else. You must change your actions to the spiritual platform, and then miracles will happen.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Satchinandan Swami. It's such a gift, again, to have you with us. We're very grateful. We also want to invite everyone to please come and meet Satchinandan Swami in person and be with our Upbuild community on Monday evening, June 13th in New York City. More details will come, but please mark your calendars. If you can fly in from wherever you are, I know we have people in different parts of the world, we would love to have you with us. It would be amazing. We're very, very excited that we get to have him in person and you in person. We also will be meeting each week for our Remembering Who We Are, so please continue to join us or begin to join us. That is also a great privilege for us. So we will let you go now if you have to go. Thank you for your amazing presence and see you soon. Please also stay on if you can, and we'll have more time with Satchinandan Swami. Thank you. Dear Lane, are you able to stay with us? If so, and you're there, you may ask your question.
Thank you, Hari Prasad. Thank you, Satchinanda Swami. My question had to do with the preciousness of life. So often I'll hear the term, life is precious, and that can be rather activating for me. So I wondered, when you hear those words, life is precious, what does that mean to you? How do you perceive it? How do you live it? How do you embody it? Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Galen. Thank you. What a good question. If you to understand best how life is so precious, it is when you look back into your life, look back at the choices you could make. Some of these choices were really very, very good and brought you to a very good place. Some of the choices made you learn a lot. They were hard lessons at times, but still you were learning. The yoga scriptures say the reason why this life is so precious is that there are two reasons actually why life is precious. One is you can make experiences, and there is a variety of experiences you can make if you allow yourself to go into it. And the second, listen to this, will become very surprising for you. The yoga scriptures say life is precious because you can attain moksha. What is moksha? Moksha is a liberation from a cycle of repeated birth and death. So one is you can make experiences by which you learn. So many, such a variety of experiences. Look at it, Gerline. How free you are to make experiences every day. You may need to be sometimes a little bit more courageous, like all of us. We can learn so much. And the second is, you can engage actually in spiritual practice and obtain liberation from the cycle of repeated birth and death. This is how the yoga scriptures would answer your question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we have a question that has come in the past from one of our participants. If we feel like our work drives us in the opposite direction of the soul, but we feel like we need to continue to do that work to keep ourselves and our family financially secure, what might we do?
I have a very wonderful solution. And I would actually like to read you something from the Bible, which I read yesterday. I just have to request Gokrishna, my assistant, to get this book. Let me just turn around. You can see him. He is a wonderful soul. You will see him in New York also. This is Gokrishna. Gokrishna. And you go into the room where I sleep. Then on the left side, two bookshelves covered with a white curtain. The left. On the left side, there is the book Vanity Karma.
Vanity Karma.
From Ajay Maharaj. Yes. So it will come to us. See, everything has its time. And sometimes we can't change things, although we want to change it. And at that time, thank you, we have to learn to accept this, that we stay at our work, which is maybe not the best for us, and that we cultivate simultaneously our inner values, our inner life. You are absolutely free, even if you are in prison. You are absolutely free, even when you are in an unfavorable working place. You just have to learn mastery over your mind. And these three steps which we have to looked at today are extremely helpful. Sometimes we have to wait. Listen to this. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal. This was in ancient times. We don't kill, but I'm just reading it. No? A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away. A time to rent and a time to sue. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love. A time for war and a time for peace. Yes, this is from a part in the Bible where it's called Ecclesiastes. I think we need to respect the time. When Arjuna stands before the mighty form of God in this world, the universal form which contains all the planets, where sun and moon are the eyes. He's trembling and he asks, "Who are you, my Lord?" And he hears the words, "Kalosmi, I am time." So there's a time now to do this work? If you can't change it, you have to do it. And there will be a time when you are free from this working place. In the meantime, don't grieve and complain about what you cannot change, because it is coming to you served by time, unchangeable time. But work on the inside, where you are free to change everything. Your attitude, your understanding, your purity of vision, and so on. I hope it helps. I know we sometimes want other answers. I told this today to myself. It's time for you, Sachinanda Swami, to go to the dentist. And it will be time to celebrate from having survived the dentist. You know, that's time.
Beautiful. Thank you. So helpful. I see Amit. Please, Amit.
Thank you. Just lobbing it in if there's a few minutes. And trying to do some version of the two or three things mentioned today, it becomes mechanical and I feel stuck sometimes. I need to access this connection to be zoomed out or detached, but then to be in that connection, I need to already be detached. I cannot ask the question, who am I, with seriousness. I'm not able to focus on the question, or I just, well, you need to get back to work. You need to get on with the next thing, or what is this question? And it just feels kind of a stuck place, that it's, you know, there's not progress.
How nice you have revealed your mind, Amit. Thank you. I think many of us can really emphasize with your question that sometimes we're just so overwhelmed by life, and it's almost a whip on our back. Get to the next thing, you know, in life. Amit, you need to break this cycle. Otherwise, you will be a slave your whole life. You need to create some me time, it's called. Some time where you just go out. It could be during the holidays when you have something, or it could be that you change your life and join the club of the early risers, you know, who that means you also have to go to bed early. You need to get out of this victim role. It is absolutely important. Why are we so compulsive? Let me address this from a purely neuroscientific point of view. When you do things repeatedly over a long time, a long period of time, you form very realistic neural networks. If I would express the same thing from a philosophical point of view, habits, when you do activities over a prolonged time, they do create deep impressions that are like riverbeds. When the water of your life goes through the riverbed, it only goes according to the bed, you know, how it is engraved in the soil. So you do need to create new habits. Yeah. And sometimes to steer your ship in the other direction, although you have gone so many times in the same direction, two things will help you. First is get out of that hamster wheel. And you need to plan this, maybe. Maybe you need to, in old times, what people did was they went on pilgrimage, Amit. They just went to left their village, left their town, went to a place which had a holy center, you know, maybe a temple, maybe a holy river, of a holy man, wise people, and they came in contact and went back renewed. I do know that even in other cultures, like the Russian cultures, this was known to the ancient Russians, the Rus people. They would go on pilgrimages and they would come back with new insights and the inner strength to jump out of the hamster wheel. The second thing is practice, practice, practice. If you just want to take three words out of this this episode, just write them down on a piece of paper. Practice, practice, practice. I started, you know, I had to do this. My family, I don't come from a family of kind people. My father is a warlord, you know, one of these heavy people who have blood on their hands and everywhere. You know, Nazi, Hitler, Germany, and the fighting. And I grew up in a situation, you know, my father wanted to break the cycle of violence and he wanted to at least give his children a peaceful home. So he took us onto a peaceful island surrounded by the ocean. It was such a wonderful childhood I had. But when I came back from the island into the town, you know, I had to show my strengths in these schools, and there was a lot of mobbing, you know, really bad things, bribes. I was in the school of the rich people, and there were really bad things happening. There was even one murder happening in that school, where I know who did it. You know, he was finally caught by the criminal investigation, and I'm lucky I didn't have to do any to say anything. But this was really a violent place, and here I come, a little island boy, protected, happy, joyful, peaceful, and I come into this situation where there was subtle aggression and very gross aggression going on. And I had to respond. I had to get ahead of the pack, you know, of wolves, in order to not be eaten up myself. So life was not always kind to me. And when I came when I got to know spiritual life, I was bitter, I was frustrated, and I was angry and foolish on top of it. And one day, a good older monk took me aside and said, "I feel you have potential, but you have to stop thinking and acting like you were before. You have to put something new. And if it's difficult for you, then just take a piece of paper, which you take out when there is a situation. Don't, the piece of paper which I took was, don't react, don't react, don't react. Now, think, 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 act with wisdom." These words, and I put it out. Don't react, don't react, don't react, okay. Think. Now only act with wisdom, you know. And it was hard. In the beginning, I only had this foolish piece of paper. And, you know, because I was just I had learned to react to my environment, and Amit, you can do it. It is not difficult. You are a strong person. You can do it. It will just require, I think, some me time. When your next holidays come, do it, or even do it tomorrow morning. You know, before you go to work, read a wisdom text. Don't always wait until something. Tomorrow morning, listen to that. It was only half an hour. It is, and you can go on fast forward until it comes to this practical steps. And take a piece of paper, and then maybe you write it down, and when you are at work, bang, you just, sorry, I have to read my piece of paper here, and then, you know, act from there. Thank you, Amit.
Thank you. Robert, you had something briefly to share regarding the exercise that Satchidananda Swami has guided us in.
Dear Satchidananda Swami, thank you so much for your valuable time and wise counsel. With your permission, I would like to share an exercise I've been practicing based on your classes. So each day, each morning when I wake up, I ask myself the question, or I tell myself, this is my last day. What do I want to do today? And several really valuable things have come out of that. The first thing is I look back on my previous years of my life, and I'm so grateful of how my life has gone. Really intense gratitude. In addition, throughout the day, I'm saying the same thing to myself. This is my last day, which really allows me to appreciate each moment and see things that I hadn't noticed prior to that. Also, in my thought processes, if I find myself being negative or maybe I'm getting angry, I say to myself, is this really the last thought I want today? and my japa has been more focused, and this practice has been so valuable. As Krishna says to Arjuna, where will you go on the moment of your death? Whatever you were thinking at that time. And of course, in order to be thinking about the spiritual life at that moment, it's necessary to have that practice in your life. So thank you for your wise advice, and this exercise has been extremely valuable, and I will definitely keep it up. Thank you.
Wow, Robert, this was very, very profound. Yes, I have said it. We have, but it's very nice to hear that reflected back, and yes. It immediately helps you to distinguish between that which is essential and that which is unessential when you think this is my last day. Thank you, thank you. Yes, this is in the Chanakya Pandit's wisdom. It's in the Niti Shastras, this exercise. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Very good. So I think we can now come to our conclusion. Is there anything that you would like to share as a final takeaway for us, Satchidananda Swami?
Practice, practice, practice. That's all. I think that will make, like Robert shared one exercise which appealed to him, and there are other things which were shared that might appeal to you, but find time in your life where you can practice, because only through practice you will be able to go out of the hamster wheel of your thoughts and acts and start on a new foot, so to say, and have a new life with new results. and so on. So that is my this is my message to you.
Wonderful. We so much appreciate your giving your time to us, Satchinanda Swami. And again, for everybody, and please do come join us in person on Monday, June 13th, the evening. Look out for details via email. And please keep coming to Remembering Who We Are, or begin coming to Remembering Who We Are at the same time each week, Eastern Time, 12 p.m. on Wednesdays. Deeply appreciate it. All the very best. Thank you for being with us. See you soon.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Yes, that's the end, no? See you soon.